it's another episode of the Sideshow Garden Podcast. I sound a little bit croaky. I've been talking a bit, but I hope you're okay. You're not too croaky, and we'll hit the intro jingle in a minute. But just before I do, I've got to say a big thank you to CD Natural Stone, to Paula Giles, and the very happy crew in there who've made this series of interviews possible. Talk to you in a sec.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
Delighted to sit in the company of Jelaine Rickards. Did I pronounce that correctly?
You did, actually. One of the few people who has, so well done.
What's the variances on it?
Jelaine, Jillian, Jillian, Rickards, all sorts.
It's a good thing you don't have an Irish name like Siobhan. You'd really be in trouble then. The garden at Chelsea 2017 we'll get to in just a moment. For those who maybe don't know who Jelaine is, we've got listeners in Salt Lake City who are on the... The subway, that's it, yeah. Or maybe just living in London or in Cornwall who are tuning in. What and who are you? What do you do for... What do you do for a living is the easy question.
Okay, so for a living, I design gardens mostly for people in the domestic market, so people's back gardens generally, for all sorts of schemes, all sorts of things. For, you know, I might do wildlife gardens, I might be small town urban gardens, might be a secret garden, all sorts of different back gardens, but it's generally for people, and I like working closely with my clients for that. I enjoy that.
I'll get to the Chelsea one in a minute, but we hear this all the time as, oh my God, that's really how she tends to do, that's her style. Every time, you'd know it was one of hers immediately because it's got X. Do you have one of them, or is it, no, I like to chop and change, I like to do one tall and one small, I like, invariably there's not a, you can't be pinned on it. To give you a different example, like a David Harbour garden at Chelsea, and David wouldn't mind me saying that in any way, they invariably have a David Harbour sculpt in the middle of it, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, they do, because that's what he's here for. But I don't think I have a style. People tell me I have, but I can't see it. So my garden's always very different, because as I said, I like to work very closely with my clients, and no clients are the same. No space is the same. So you are dictated to by the surrounding countryside or location, or whether it's buildings or whatever. I don't think I have a style. I mean, I like geometry. I love geometry. And then I like softening it up with the natural plants. I've always had a good eye for space and style and 3D. So I think that sort of works its way into design work very well. But I don't think I have a style. I'd be surprised if you could identify me. If I showed you 5 different designs, I'd be surprised if you knew they were by me.
I want to take it down a little bit further back. How did you get into doing what you're doing now? Were you a little sideshow listeners bingo at home, like Peter, plants under your bed, 5 years of age, growing radish seeds in 2 foot deep trenches, getting it entirely wrong and sort of figuring it out as you went along?
No, actually not. And I wish I could come up with a really good story like that, but I'm not. I was just a girl, grew up in Cornwall, surrounded by countryside, surrounded by sea mostly, rocks, shapes, formations, nature. I used to go out, pack up a bag of food and just go up a hill for the day and watch the clouds going out across the landscape and watch the wind blowing through the grasses or whatever. So I wasn't ever really a gardener. I really wasn't, no. But I think my inspiration mostly came from my childhood where I grew up in Cornwall. It was a magical place, actually. It was a great place to grow up with, really connecting with nature. And I like to try and bring some of that into the urban settings that we live in. I live in London, and most of the gardens I design are in London. And to try and bring some of that into London is a good thing to do. Try and help people connect with nature, because that's very grounding and very relaxing. And I think that people living in cities can really do with that. Need to connect back with nature just to ground themselves.
Well, that's led me on to one way. Now my brain is split. It's actually at a fork in the road. But I wanted to, I don't know what it is. Sorry, I've got an itchy nose syndrome, and it's just one of them. But when then was your first, shall I call it, official foray into the horticulture industry?
Yeah, so I was always probably the frustrated artist of the family, actually, because I loved art and I wanted to do art. But my dad thought that was a terrible idea because I wasn't good enough to be an artist. And it's probably true. So I went into the computing world and did computing for 10, 15 years or so. Stopped and had a break for children. I had three children. At that point, I decided that actually I really needed to do something more creative. So thinking about all the things that I loved, I thought, well, we'll try garden design and see, and just see. It was either going to be that or sculpture, but I went with garden design, and actually it ticked all the boxes. So probably 20 years ago, I started designing gardens, went through college, got some qualifications, very strong in design principles, actually. And so from 20 years or so, I've been designing gardens, but mostly around my children as well. So my children were always my priority to bring them up. So I sort of did all my work around school holidays and stuff like that.
Do you remember your first garden that you designed? And a little bit like the Beatles maybe doing Sgt. Pepper's, this isn't to be disrespectful in any way, or even the White Album, and you look back at Love Me Do, they're extremes apart, but everybody loves both of them, and I appreciate that. One was of an era and fitted, and one was leading more into, I suppose, a Woodstock, which wasn't around in the 60s, nor what is perceived or when people close their eyes and think of that.
Well, to be honest, the first ones were very much friends from playgrounds, and I had two extremes going on at the same time. I had somebody who just wanted me to do a little bit of tweaking for their planting in their back garden, which was just, that was fine. I thought that was great. I really thought, wow, you know, I'm going to get on the bandwagon here, and, you know, this is going to be my first proper garden and everything. And then at the same time, I had another person who was recommended who had this much larger garden with a massive level drop. Which is always challenging. That's challenging at the best of times, let alone when you're only just starting out. And so I was doing the two at the same time, and that was quite challenging for me. And it made me realise that the little planting scheme that I thought was going to be the best thing I'd ever done was just like really very, very simple compared to juggling children and steps and precipices and level changes. So I think that first one I did with the level changes really kind of set me up thinking how I could do garden design properly, and that was the first one in my portfolio, actually.
We're going to pause it here because judging has just commenced, okay. So I'll stand off the garden.
Told you about my first garden with the level drop, and that was my first proper scheme that went on my portfolio.
Well, somebody remembers where we were. Yeah, where were we going to after that?
I've no idea. I've lost the track on that one.
Judges were literally just on your garden in real time a few minutes ago.
Yeah,
I know what that experience is like, and a lot of people listening to this will know. Let's get to the garden. I've been involved or part of a team that had done three gardens, I think it was, yeah, over a, I think it was a 2.5-3 week build in South Africa in Cape Town.
Okay.
When I saw this, having driven past the shipping containers that were hairdressing salons, supermarkets, and being into the shanty towns, it wasn't that I wondered, oh my God, did she do this justice, and therefore I'm an expert in that area. It was more, I appreciate what a show garden should be, but I've also seen what is over there. And so one is allowed to take license in order to produce a garden that the designer can be proud of. I'll give you a funny example just for you listening at home. When the Super Shoes garden was done in 2018, I think I spoke to Kenny White about this, and he spoke about the brief they gave the designer. And you may turn around and say, well, they did a very good job on behalf of the charity, which they did, or the designer did. However, you might turn around and say, well, that was more of a show garden than that one, but the brief still has to be followed. Medals aside, you were on my radar to be interviewed yesterday, but we couldn't get you for yesterday because you were that busy. For those who are listening, just explain to me what is CAMFED, what was the brief that they gave you?
CAMFED stands for the Campaign for Female Education. They look to support girls who are really sort of underprivileged in sub-Saharan Africa, and they try to keep them in education because that's what makes a difference. If a girl drops out of education, then she's ending up in the poverty cycle, and she's not going to get out of that. She's going to end up, you know, with loads of kids, a husband that's probably not great, and she's just never going to have a nice life. And also the community gets taken down with her. You know, they're just permanently struggling for food, struggling for existence, high rate of death. It's not a great thing. But you keep a girl in education, finishes her education, she's most likely to get a job, if she can get a job, or better still, start her own business. And that's quite often the case, actually, in rural Africa. They start their own businesses, then she can have a husband as and when she wishes. She may have children as and when she wishes. She has personal choices, which is great for that one person. But apart from that, she'll be, if she's starting up her own business, then she'll be employing people locally, and she'll be lifting her community out of poverty as well. So, you know, education, as it says on my blackboard here, education changes everything. And it's something that I'm very, 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 very passionate about, because it's just so very unfair that girls just can't become what they could. They don't reach their potential just for the want of an education. So how to put their messaging into the garden on a low budget at Chelsea, make it real and make it appeal to the public and make it appeal to the media, because what Camford needed was to raise their profile. And you do that through engaging people and media. And the medal, honestly, always was secondary. I knew we would get a medal. I didn't ever think we would not get a medal, but the medal was never... The garden wasn't designed around the medal. The garden was designed around Camfed's mission, Camfed's work, and how to engage the public and how to get as much media interest in here as possible.
Jelaine's having a cup of coffee, and rightly so. It's a long couple of days. No, you're perfectly fine. But the lemon trees are planted in oil barrels. There are peanuts on display. There are tomato plants. There are strawberries. There are a lot of things. There are people pointing at sweet potato and wondering, is that sugar cane next to it? And Alan Matt Kightley said to me something similar. He used to stand out into the crowd. Joe Thompson spoke to me about that as well, standing out there and hearing the feedback. And I couldn't hear a negative amongst them. And as you rightly know from doing show gardens or doing any garden, 99 might love it, and then you'll get one that'll just cut straight through you like a butter knife, and it's phenomenal what those words can do. Maybe you should describe what the garden contains in audio. I know Tim Howell is listening. He'll respond to this on Twitter, hopefully. Hi Tim. And he'll have, he is a great guy, we're both smiling now, and he'll have some photographs up there for you. And what are people looking at, or what was in your head on paper which became what people are looking at?
So I wanted to obviously reflect Camfed's message of education. That's so hence the classroom setting, which is instant recognisable as the classroom because of the big blackboard across it. You can't mistake it. I wanted to reflect the people in Zimbabwe have lots of challenges every day, and yet they remain positive, vibrant. The day doesn't start without a song and a dance, and I really wanted to capture that positivity and vibrancy and pop that into the garden as well. So we've done that, I've done that through use of sort of big bold leaf shapes against a very vibrant blue wall. We've used lots of colourful objects as well, and authentic objects from Zimbabwe, which we bought, scrounged. We actually didn't buy anything, to be honest. I'm lying there. We scrounged, we went to eBay, we got that Zimbabwean drum from eBay, for example. That cup up there was 50p in Oxfam shop. We got donations, so, you know, this garden really is done on the cheap. But I think the key elements are really the unusual planting, and we couldn't have done that without the Eden project. So I really wanted to reflect what people would grow in Zimbabwe on a commercial level. I mean, I met a female farmer out there, and she had her own farm, and this is absolutely what she would be growing. But also they get taught in schools how to grow things. So Camfed also have something called the Mother Support Group, and they are, well, they're the mothers of the children who have been supported in Africa. And the mothers come to the school and they grow crops at the school, and they harvest the crops at the school, and then they cook the crops so that children have something to eat. Because quite often these kids are walking to school, they've had no breakfast, and they need something to eat when they get there. But not only do they grow the crops at the school, but they also show the children how to grow crops. So the kids can go home, if they have a packet of seeds, then they can grow their own food. So when we think about gardens in the UK, we tend to think of flowers and leafy textures and a place to relax. When they think of gardens, they think of food, and that's kind of the bottom line. And I really wanted to reflect that in the garden. And I wanted also to engage the public. Well, you say that you're seeing people down there saying, oh, there's a sweet potato and a sugar cane, but we get disconnected from our food and what it looks like, where it comes from. I've put the peanuts at the front because people don't understand that the peanut flour actually goes down into the ground and the nut is formed underneath. It's actually a legume. People think it's growing on trees. So I wanted also to try and educate people and start thinking about where your food comes from. So there's lots and loads and loads and loads of stories. I could go on forever.
We were talking off microphone about... I'm unsure where my head goes, but the chat was about piecing show gardens together on a budget. And you did public May... I say you, the public, you listening who go to garden shows or even see them online or maybe see them on the BBC, you might turn around and say, oh my God, that one's amazing. And the conversation invariably is, I'll paint a Timotei advert here, whether it's the simplest white one single sheet of cloth that the invariably blonde-haired lady is wearing in a field of poppies or daisies. Bear with me here, I'm getting there. Or it's a royal wedding and the gown is the longest. never in my head have my sister's maid turn around and say, that's a lovely dress. But always it's a case of, is it worn with elegance and grace? Is it out of context, if you get where I'm coming from? And when I look at the Timotei advert as versus a royal wedding, I've never turned around and said, that would have cost her £17 in material. I've always said, my God, that's just done magnificently. When we were speaking about inspiration for gardens, I joked with you, and when people said, oh, where did you get the inspiration for that garden? And I said, well, we rang CD Stone and said, we've got no money, can you do X for us? And they went, sure, you can have this bit. And we went, okay. And then we get into Oxford Planters and we said, well, these are the dimensions. And Sarah said, well, don't worry about it. We were not in a position to turn around and say, I'm a prima donna. Mm-hmm. Do you know who my makeup artist is? Mm-hmm. I want yellow M&Ms. Please take out all of the red ones. I'll be in my dressing room. She would have told me. So when you say on a budget, anybody who's designed a garden very much gets that. And if they don't, then they live in a magic bubble underneath the stars, not on this planet. You've done something particularly amazing. It is all of the things that make me smile. But then there's a behind the scenes, which is, well, we actually bought a 17 quid piece of material and we won gold medal for it. And that's what you've done, which is something quite phenomenal, but nobody notices.
Okay, so budget was tight, but the 50p cup actually just fitted the scheme. Yeah. So we came across it in a joyous moment. So yeah, well, we've got to use that one then. It was pretty tight because I came up with the scheme knowing that for a charity like Camford, they didn't want to do a main avenue show garden. They were uncomfortable with doing something, spending that sort of money on it. We were very lucky we had a donor, a private donor for the scheme, but we set a limit, so I knew how much we had. And knowing from my own business how you set a budget and the budgets often get blown because unexpected things happen, I always put a reserve in as well. So I came up with a budget for them, but I'd also already put a big buffer in there. And sure enough, that got used. The construction of it went up as cheap as chips because it's just block work, basically, and a bit of render and labour. So, you know, that. But again, reflecting the truthness. This is a truthful garden and it reflects truthfully how they construct out there. That's what they use. And the planting, we managed to contain that down quite substantially by working in close collaboration with the Eden Project. They grew a lot for us at cost. Without that kind of collaboration, this garden would only be half the scheme that it is. We managed to get donated from CED, of course, those amazing rocks. And that's quite a cost, you know, because we went to Scotland and chose some. Then we went to Thurrock and chose some. And then I went to Drayton and chose some. And they allowed us, they put them all together for us. And we went to their yard. They allowed us to use their yard for a whole day so we could go left a bit, right a bit. This one's going here, that one's going there. We mocked it up off site so that when it came to site, we could just quickly put it in. So, you know, without this kind of cross collaboration between all these different industries, the garden just doesn't happen. So it was really tight, and to the point where you're thinking, I've got a volunteer team of women here who are planting for me. Can I go and get them all a cup of tea and put it on Camford's bill? That's how tight it was. And, you know, a lot of the stuff I didn't claim for because it's a charity. So you just think, well, my travel in and out of London and everything, I'm not claiming for that because that's just what you do. So, you know, ordinarily, if you had one of those enormous gardens with a huge budget, then you would probably claim for all your expenses. But it's just, when you're passionate about something and you want the best for that charity, then you really kind of nail it on the money and just try and be as frugal as possible. So it kind of did run through everything, every decision I made about what we buy. Even when I went to a sort of market, and you know that we were haggling that bucket over there. If you can't really see, of course, viewers, but there's a little tin bucket over there. I think it was £7, and I just said, no, it's too expensive. And we haggled them down to £5. So that's what it was like doing this budget garden. But you know what? People in Zimbabwe don't go off and buy new stuff. You know, we wanted it all looking a bit old and knackered. And if we got anything that was slightly looking too new, we made it look a bit knackered because it needed to fit in with the garden. So, you know, I think all those sort of decisions do actually show themselves in the garden. The fact that it's been real hard work, that it's come from a passionate place and that nothing is new because they wouldn't have new out there. I think all that endeavour actually just has an undercurrent through the garden, and the goodwill of people as well really comes through too. And again, in Zimbabwe, they are all pretty good friends with each other and get along.
I'll put the cup of tea, cup of coffee thing in context. When you've got no budget, or the budget, be it five figures, let's say 10 grand, if you're talking a team of 10 people with a cup of coffee at 250 each, yeah, three times a day,
yeah. Yeah.
multiply that by 12, 14
exactly.
days.
Exactly.
And the list, believe me, is endless when you're paying 300 quid for 3 tons of topsoil to be delivered in that you also desperately need because one rock was slightly smaller than the other, or one tree you had to go up another 10 mil, or the root ball didn't take up that amount of space. And these things happen, and invariably, you know you can get no more. It does come out of the designer's pocket at times.
Yes.
However, there is also a point where your name is at the top of the page. And I described it to one person after myself and Burnham did our thing, that it's like gambling. You're trying to win back your money. In this case, it's a show garden, but you're after putting in X amount of time, you're 4 days beforehand. There is no turning back. There's nothing you can do. You have to finish, and therefore you keep going. I'll stick on that point. Did you play a dangerous game? I say dangerous. Not being disrespectful, you could have chosen to do a garden, a double underline that, at Chelsea Flower Show for somebody who maybe wanted, or their brief was a little bit more of contemporary style, inverted commas. Do you understand where I'm coming from without being disrespectful to anybody? You may have looked better, but medals aside, as you said, this isn't the type of garden you might normally see in London. There's a helicopter going overhead, my apologies. Should we wait till that passes?
Okay.
He's pretty close, that's okay. But does that, I won't say quabble, of a past tense, grapple maybe?
Well, no, it never was that for me. I was only ever going to do a garden at Chelsea for a charity because it's really stressful. You put your heart and soul into it. I think without passion is what drives me. If I'm not passionate about something, then it's going to be awful. So it had to be something I was passionate about and something I could get excited about. So really it had to be for a good cause. And actually, you know, I wanted to do something different at Chelsea. Sometimes it can all start to look a little bit the same. And I thought, you want to get the cameras in here. We've got to do something different. I'm going to do it for a good cause. So Camford were a good fit. And I can do contemporary gardens. I've done loads of them. And I did think about doing that for Camford. I did write in the concept, think, we've either got to do something that's very authentic, or I've got to do something that is... I almost did something that was very, very contemporary to show the more progressive side of Africa. I nearly went that way. But then in the back of my mind was, it's got to be different. It's got to be unusual. It's got to be different to get this message across, to compete. In a way, you're competing for media here, and you have to compete. The only way you can do that is to do something that's very different. So that's why I went for the sort of more authentic look. And also, you know, to do something very contemporary on a tight budget is really, really difficult. I don't think you can do it. I just don't think you can. You can't get the level of detailing in there that you need, not in a small space like this.
I'll back that up by saying, and don't get me wrong, this isn't the Peter Donegan show, or at least this interview isn't about me. But I do remember Ed Burnham saying of the garden in Cardiff, bearing in mind Ed has done 14 RHS gardens and yours truly has just done one in a very grand castle, it's not that we can't build, it's that we had a budget of $2,500. And Ed's note to me was, we literally could not have done any more. We had no more money. We would have wanted a Manchester City benefactor, football club that is, in order to get us to the next level or to the Champions League. We just couldn't have done it. So on one hand, my head is saying it's extremely clever of you, because a brief as such allows you to do something a little bit different that would fit a budget. And as you rightly say, to differentiate that and back that up again, I doubt there's any other garden in Chelsea with a cup that costs 50p from an Oxfam shop. Not to giggle, but it's genuine and it fits in this garden. It wouldn't fit anywhere else.
Yeah, that's right. It wouldn't fit. You wouldn't see it anywhere else. And we've also got, I don't know if you noticed on the way in, a shed snakeskin, which was donated by the Zoological Society of London. So you don't think you'll see that anywhere else either.
No.
But that's it. So if you're going to do a weird and wacky garden, you've got to really, really, really go for it and make it, you know, once I decided it was going to be bold, bright, vibrant and reflect everything that I'd seen in Zimbabwe, and all of Canford's messaging, then you just got to go for it, and you've got to stick to that theme, and you've got to bring yourself back to that theme every single time. And this show garden got moved. We applied originally for a 10 by 10 plot with two open sides, and we got accepted, but then they changed our plot to a 12 meter by 6 meter plot, so I had to redesign it. And then our sponsor wasn't at all, then they accepted us on the 12 by 6 meter plot, no problem. But the sponsor wasn't at all happy with our positioning of where we were, so we had to go and make a bit of a fuss with the RHS and ask them if they could very nicely, please, could you move us up, because our sponsor's just not happy about that. And they moved us, as it happened, the top end of this row had jigged around anyway, so they moved us back up to a 10 by 10 plot, but we only had the front face opening. So this garden's been redesigned 3 times. And will be redesigned again when it goes to the Eden project. So you have to really focus and keep yourself so focused on what your initial concepts and ideas were, because one of the judges' comments was that one of the corners could have had some height. And my original design had a big banana tree right front of show with bananas on it, so that the public would go, wow, it was going to be my showstopper. But then when we got moved around so many times, I lost that element. And actually, sure enough, that came back in one of my comments. So you've got to just stick to your theme, really, and just don't get pulled away in any other direction. And that's quite difficult to do. As I said, this garden's been 18 months in the planning. So to be focused on it and not deter from that original theme is quite tricky. You've got to be really kind of straight-minded about that one.
There are things that I have taken to heart. We spoke earlier on about the one person out of the 1 million who says one comment.
Yeah, I had one of those yesterday.
Well, Joe Thompson's response to that was my favourite, but that's another day's work and we'll park that there. If you go listen to our interview previously, you'll understand what I'm talking about. I'm a happy-go-lucky camper. I've got daydreams and sunshine always in my head. But I did have a down moment, a mini blip. And I remember Burnham sent me a note saying, don't worry, hombre, we did right by the right people. It's yes. All good, XX, to you listening at home. But in a garden sense, with such a big family involved in making one garden happen, with a charity behind the scenes, with your name at the top of the page, with the Royal Horticultural Society, a 215-plus-year-old institution, and you walk out with a shiny medal. In this case, you did very right by the right people for the right people. And I think it's just one of those magical little gems that I'm delighted to see, but it seems to maybe to some unexpectedly, but in my case it certainly made my heart beat a little bit faster. Congratulations, Shalane.
Thank you so much. That's a very kind comment, actually. The only bad comment I've heard so far were two little ladies yesterday walking past who went, that won't get gold. And I just burst out laughing. I just thought it's like it was never about the medal. It really was never about the medal. And it just goes to show that if you're passionate about something and you commit yourself to it and you can just get all the elements that you want from that passion and put it into the garden, then really the medal is secondary. And I mean, to get a gold, of course I'm thrilled about it, but it was unexpected. Last night I honestly thought, what if I don't even get a medal? I really, because with a garden like this, you don't know how the judges are going to be with it. I mean, you mentioned the brief, and this is true, and you submit your design with your brief, your own written brief, and then you have the ability to change that. I think it's about 3 weeks before judging, because schemes change, things change. So the garden did change, and we then rewrote the brief to fit the garden. So as long as you're very lucid in your brief and in your design work, you've actually done what you said in your brief, I think you're kind of already there. So I think the comments from the public yesterday or from people yesterday were very, very, very lovely. I had a lot of people doing this, and you can't see what that is, but people just touching their heart, and it really strikes a chord with them. And I think it's been a passion project, and I think that's coming through. I think it's going to really... Camford are here trying to raise funds for their Sea Growth campaign. I'm going to have to pop that one in.
Pop it in.
Sea Growth campaign is aiming to raise enough funds by 2020 to send the next 1,000 female businesswomen into agricultural business. And that's what makes the difference there, you see? So they worked out that if everybody who's interested in this garden, not just at Chelsea, but on social media, Facebook, Instagram, whatever, if everybody just gave £5, they'd meet that easily. They'd make that target easily. Ooh, there we go. Wind's caught my plates. With that passion in mind, you know, that just sort of drives you all the way through. It absolutely comes through in the garden and people are really loving it. As I said, we're getting that comment. We had Gabby Roslin walking up the path yesterday, who grew up in Zimbabwe, and she got halfway up the path and put her hand to her heart like that. And she's just... I'm just having a bit of a moment, actually, because it had really captured Zimbabwe and really, really got her back to where she was. And I've had that comment many times, particularly the red soil just transports people. If they know that place, it transports them right there. And I've had that comment many times.
For you listening at home, if anything you heard in today's episode, just send me a note at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSideshow, sideshow.com. We'll have all of the details up there for you. Thanks so much for listening. Huge thanks to CD Stone as well. And if you see them on social media or one of them things, or you meet them on the street, give them a high five and tell them I said hello. I'm very grateful, and without them, this definitely definitely would not have happened. Shalane, thank you so much. Congratulations again.
Thank you so much. It's been a good interview. Nice talking to you. Thank you.